This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We can't hear you, Mike, which is,
I don't know what's going on. Are we good? Are you there? Yeah, it's fine.
It's
my first time ever doing this.
He can hear us. Sorry, I didn't know that.
I couldn't tell. Yeah, sorry. My thing was just a little unplugged there. Anyways, welcome into the Game Day Rewind, the ninth Game Day Rewind. A victory version of the Game Day Rewind this season as the Cleveland Browns take down the Chicago Bears 20-17 in a thrilling ball game, a frustrating ball game, and a ball game that gave all of us some heart palpitations. We're going to dive into it. We're going to talk about all the good. We're going to talk about some of the things that concerned us. Obviously, more injuries for us to talk about, and we're going to get into all that over the next 45 minutes or so. So welcome on in. Thanks for joining us here on this edition of the Game Day Rewind. With you, I'm your host, Michael Keefe. Joining me around the horn, Brad Ward, Jake Burns, Pete Smith. Boys, have you all settled down a little bit? Has the heart rate come down a little bit after that near hit on the Hail Mary at the end of that game?
No, I mean, yeah, I guess, right? I think the thing that bothered me was the play before the Hail Mary, a couple plays before there, that they let him even get in that position. But yeah, I mean, we've seen that play go the opposite direction way too many times, right? Darnell Mooney just really needs to just let it sit on his belly. It's a catch, yeah. And he sort of self drops it. So yeah, I mean, certainly not a game you wanted to see come down to that, but I think it's exciting to get that victory right and certainly push away from some of those longtime games we've seen that are of the history books where we've seen that go the opposite direction. So yeah, that was less excitement, more relief. I would probably phrase it that way.
You talk about never didn't have it. 7-1 at home. How could you ever doubt this team? I mean, this is what they do, right?
Yeah, seriously. Stressful day. You know, there was really times in this game I felt like, you know, a lot of the other games that were close this year, I was like, I felt like, you know, they have a chance to do this. I really felt like it, you know, after they muffed the punt and then Flacco threw the interception, I kind of had like this sinking feeling that maybe just today wasn't that day, but they continue to fight and find a way in pretty remarkable fashion.
But that's it, and that's, you know, we've talked a lot about the difference in this team and the culture they're trying to build and the winning culture, and this is where you see it play out. Because, Brad, I was sitting on the couch having the same kind of feeling you were. When Flacco threw that interception, I was thinking, oh, you know what? Everything just continues to go the other way. And frankly, boys, for a lot of this game, it felt like the Bears had the playbook for the Browns. It felt like the Bears knew exactly what was coming. They knew exactly what the Browns were trying to do. Their defensive backs played a whale of a game. They were jumping routes. They were getting great pressure on Joe Flacco and obviously the decimated offensive line. Really, Brad, I'm with you. It felt like that. Like, you know what? Things are just bouncing the way of the Bears in this one. And for the Browns to come back in that fourth quarter and to put up some of the stats that we'll get into, that's the sign of a culture change, right? I mean, that's what we've been looking for so many years. Is a team that can go out and win a game like this just the way the Browns did.
I'm genuinely amazed that the Browns outplay their fan base every week. Like, every week, the fan base is like, no, they're done. Done.
Yeah.
And yet they will play. And to the point where, like, they're putting Fred off the street in the game and he's making plays. And like, they will put guys in that people are looking at their program and going, who the hell is this guy? And he makes a play. Like, it's remarkable to watch this team sort of just make stuff happen with guys that have no business being as effective as they are in key spots. De'Anthony Bell, like, you would look at him and you'd go, oh, he's a special teamer and he can't really play defense. And he had, yeah, I give credit to Jim Schwartz, like, he was put in position to make plays and do some good stuff. And you're sitting there going, okay, I guess he can make plays. Ronnie Hickman, all right, fair enough. You know, why not Ronnie Hickman? Let's make it happen. And that's, A credit to what this team is building, that there's, whether it's a practice squad guy, a rookie, somebody off their couch, that they will just put somebody in and they will play until the echo of the whistle. And like, that is what it has taken on any number of these games, including this one, where you're just like, no chance. And they just say, no, we're going to win. And that's it.
Guys, yeah. Go ahead, Brad.
No, I'm just going to say zero quit. And it's amazing, right? Like, it's an amazing feeling. It's an easy team to root for because of that. And we've talked about this before. And it does feel like a culture thing or a buy-in thing from everybody that they put out on the field, and it's fun. And, you know, this comeback was unexpected and, you know, and just an amazing win all around. And to Pete's point, with guys that probably, you know, shouldn't be doing some of the things they're doing out there, but guys are stepping up, man, and that's huge. You know, long term, well, I'm sure we'll get to stuff long term, why injury wise, but they got through this one how they had to get through it. But yeah, I mean, the safety room decimated down to Bell and Hickman. They did well. I mean, the defense played fantastic all day. I mean, the defense was amazing. I don't think that. If Flacco doesn't throw a couple interceptions, I don't know if they score except for that field goal. So,
yeah, no, you're right. The one touchdown drive, one of the great drives of all time for the Bears, 8 plays, like 1 yard.
Yeah,
and it looked like the Browns were going to get a stop there, but Justin Fields made a good play to Cole Kmet, and the other score was a pick six. So really, the Browns defense all day. And we're going to get into the defense a little bit, but the Browns defense all day just stifled the Bears and really kept this game in striking distance, so that when the offense was able to get hot in the fourth quarter, like they did, the defense gets the credit for playing those 3 quarters to keep them in it. So, Jake, 9 wins on the season, 9-5. We're all looking at standings at this point. 3 games to go. At Houston, home against the Jets, at Cincinnati. Just talk about how huge this was for the Browns to get this win. We know they're a game up in that wild card, you know, the top wild card spot. But just talk about how big this is for the implications for this team this season.
Yeah, if you do like a lot of simulators before and after this game, it actually didn't tell you this game mattered that much. It actually only went from like summer sports had them at like 84% if they lost, and went down to 79%. And if they won, it's up near 92%. So it's not, for as far as winning a singular game, it wasn't that huge of a swing, obviously, because it's an NFC game.
Right.
However, if you look at some of the teams that matter the rest of the way, Colts, Texans, Bengals, and Bills, they play really favorable schedules. Even the Broncos, favorable schedules the rest of the way. So obviously, the goal that I think we've all been sort of echoing is get to 10 wins. That's when you have a real chance. But if you do the simulator stuff and look at 10 wins, especially if the Bengals are able to go into Kansas City and get a win, you never know. That Kansas City team, not as formidable as your mind will tell you, they run into some scenarios at 10 wins that do not allow them to get in. So they really, in these next 3, like getting this one is going to be huge. If they can get to 11, then they really control their own destiny. And I got to tell you guys, this game, like winning this, and if the Ravens happen to lose tonight, and then the Ravens play, do they play the Bills in a couple weeks? I think they do.
Bills and Dolphins.
Yeah, they play some real games. So like, the division is very much in play. Now the Texans won a game that was really gritty as well today over the Oilers/Titans. That gives them a chance to keep a lot of their dreams alive. They'll be very geared up to play the Browns. But I'm just saying, like, my general thing about where this is right now is there's a lot of simulator stuff that we can get into. There's a lot of, like talking about their limitations we can get into. And I'm kind of trying to piggyback off of what you guys are talking about here, which is, like, way back, Brad, I don't know, man, like 7-8 weeks ago, it's like we're talking about this as a week-to-week team. I think we really have to try to stop making sense of it and just enjoy it, because, Pete, you're talking about like Ronnie Hickman and DeAnthony Bell and these guys. Like, it doesn't make a ton of sense why they're 9-5, because they've had every reason in the world to pack it in. And today is a microcosm of that, in my opinion. They're down 17-7 Everything feels condensed. The linebackers are jumping every intermediate throw they're trying to make. The corners are giving them fits on the outside, and they just figure out a couple touchdown drives. They figure out a couple home run balls. They figure out what they're doing, and they do just enough offensively to win. And it's like, instead of trying to put, you know, when's it going to come to an end feelings in place, I think we should really be driving into this, enjoy it. There have been more talented Browns teams that couldn't do what this team is doing, but that's the way the NFL goes at times, where, you know, you just figure out ways to win games. I think we've talked about how these young guys are now becoming veterans. You want to see, like, I know we've been a little bit on this, I think, at the OBR about David's development and Joku's development as a leader. Like, look at how some of these young guys have formulated into leadership roles that we've seen. Doesn't feel like that long ago David Njoku was drafted or Miles was drafted, but these are 5-6 year veterans, right? These are leaders. Denzel's a leader, and like the way the league looks at them and the way David is really stepped into that role, and eventually the tide shifts because you've got enough of these guys who can will you to victory, and that you can just drag them along. And I think they're in the midst of that. And what I just kind of want to do is don't worry about anything past the Texans game or tonight, worrying about like how talking about how your Cleveland Browns have won 9 football games and just really enjoying the vibe of this team is giving off. Because again, I'm taking what you guys are saying, the copyright plagiarism stuff's the best way to go on some of these shows. Like, they're doing things that don't make sense. And it's one of the most likable, against all odds, I think, even from the national perspective, it's one of the most likable teams in the league this year. And I think that that's really dang cool. And you guys as fans, I hope you're enjoying that instead of kind of like looking for the doomsday moment in the schedule or how far they can go. And I've been guilty of this, and just enjoying that they're 9-5 and like, hey, man, like look at how they can beat Houston, or like they can do anything. They're showing you they can do anything. They put a game on calendar, the Dallas game, right? Dallas-Buffalo today. Dallas just gets their doors blown off, a 10-3 Dallas team. The Browns really only had one of those, and that's because they lost a quarterback minutes before it started. Other than that, they've been in every ball game through large portions of it, right? So I guess I'm perpetually amazed at what they're doing. A little bit long there, but they're just amazed, and I hope that we're enjoying it instead of trying to pick apart where it could fall apart or when the injuries are too much. They don't know when the injuries are too much. You know, there's not like a magical number here where you get to 13 guys on IR and then the season's over. No, they don't know that. They don't believe in that. They're just out there playing, and the guys stepping in are believing they can do it too. So really damn cool, man. Probably the most enjoyable football team we've had since they've come back in 99, to be honest. Like, just enjoyable group of guys from top to bottom, right? The 2020 team was better, but just top to bottom, this team is fighting hard. And that's awesome, right? That's really cool to see.
Well, and Pete, Brad, you know, Jake talked about they're playing in a way that you're not, you know, they've had better teams that have had worse records, and sometimes that's how the NFL goes. But guys, do you have any insight or any opinions on the fact that, you know, maybe this is coming from just a shift in the attitude of this team, a shift in the focus of this team, a shift in the coaching of this team? You know, it's one thing to talk about the way the ball bounces in the NFL and all that stuff, but is this also something coming from above that you guys can see, that you guys can spot, that you guys can give credit to as well, whether it's the coaching, the front office, whatever, that's forcing this team to be probably the hardest fighting Browns team we've seen in a long time?
I would just say that I don't think there's one thing that you can specifically point out, but I do think that when you look at NFL seasons, right, each one is its own entity, and each team is a different iteration of that. And we've talked about that a lot, right? Like, that's why you can't carry often momentum from one season into another and et cetera, right? But you have this iteration of this team and this group of guys that, you know, went to the Greenbrier, and then you have this coaching staff that brought in Schwartz at the right time. And it just feels like kind of a blend of everything. The right group of guys, a mix of veteran and young guys, with the right coaching staff, the right buy-in, all at the right time. And sometimes you get that mix And that this is what you get is a team that comes together and plays for each other and doesn't quit and has relentless fight. And that's why you get a really good season from a team that sometimes maybe has all odds stacked against them, but they keep overcoming them. And that's really special. But I think it's just that is, yeah, there's probably a lot of people that deserve credit in that, right? But I think more than anything, it's a collection of certain things that just kind of happen at the right time. That's kind of how I feel about it.
There are a number of things in play that are working out for the Browns. One, and the players have been talking about this for a good part of the season. Being empowered by the coach has been huge for them. You've listened to Amari Cooper talk about how, hey, I can suggest plays and they'll listen. And like, that's a powerful feeling because one, it's very easy for any receiver to go, hey, I'm open. I'm always open. I'm always open. Give me the ball. You hear Ja'Marr Chase say this all the time. It's a different deal when a guy has to come and suggest a play because now you have it's on you at that point. And they've put that they've talked about that. Myles Garrett talked about that this past week, talking about player empowerment or like the things that people don't hear about, like going, oh, Kevin Stefanski didn't do anything with defense, except he's talking about how Kevin Stefanski goes and asks the defense, what are you guys doing that you like that's working? And they keep doing it. That's a big part of it. Because now that the players own more of this, it's easier for them to, one, feel like it's theirs, which is huge. I don't care what you do for work or whatever. If you feel like it's yours, you're going to put more into it. It's also making it so young players feel like they have to step up. These guys care about each other. And that's, you know, I've tried to, you know, I wrote a long time ago why I thought Stefanski should get the extension he richly deserves. He's been building this for a while of trying to get guys to do this. Even when he came in 2020, you know, during the COVID stuff, like they had all those player meetings and like trying to get these guys all on the same page. And it's not easy to do that. It doesn't happen overnight. It is taking years and Browns coaches don't get years. So now you're finally getting to see a team take its coaching and like become that extension of that. So what do you hear all the time now? Everybody's saying, we just got to figure out a way to go 1-0. That's Kevin Stefanski every week. They are now echoing that message. And like Joel Bitonio several weeks ago was like, that makes it so much easier because we're not sitting there looking, oh my God, all these guys are hurt. How are we going to do this? They're going, all I got to worry about is what do I got to do this week? And it works. Like it's working for them. And there's things you can do that. Now, if you're asking me what separated the Browns game and what do I point to that why they won this game, the Browns were the smarter football team when it mattered the most. If you look at like that Amari Cooper completion, they looked that the Bears defense looked like the Browns defense any number of years you can pick out. Everybody's eyes are in the backfield. They're sitting there going, oh, the play's over or it's going to take care of itself. The Browns keep playing. And there's a lot of examples of this. I expect when Jake does his film breakdown, you're going to see stuff. You're going, that's just really smart football. Like David Njoku the past 2 weeks has been playing extremely smart football. The scramble drill stuff they did last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars carried over into this one on the first touchdown. That was not a drawn up play. That was just two guys figuring it out on the fly, reading each other and making the right play. The 34 yard reception, that was a simple drag route. Njoku just ran to space and Flacco threw to an area that was open. That was just good, smart football. And then the other stuff that, you know, reminds you of Browns teams past, nobody could catch a ball from Justin Fields. I don't care what team they were on. Nobody could catch it. And that cost them certainly. But like, this was a game where the Browns, I thought the Browns defense was going to play well for reasons that Justin Fields is a awful matchup for what Jim Schwartz wants to do. He's going to speed you up. That's the worst thing you could do with Justin Fields because he's going to throw the ball around to wherever and see what happens, which is what you saw. Now they dropped multiple interceptions and everything else, but like you just saw a smarter football team. And in the end, they were just sort of patient enough and they've done this a couple times, but they are doing things we have not seen them do in past years. And even some of these other guys are starting to figure it out, but like, you know, it's the difference between David Njoku and Amari Cooper and Joe Flacco to a certain extent versus Cedric Tillman, who's a rookie who just doesn't know enough at this point. And the Bears are full of a lot of Cedric Tillmans, where the Browns have guys that have now figured this thing out. They've been in the offense a while, save for Flacco. And it's paying off in huge dividends. They've become this team that can do this.
Yeah, boys, real quick, I want to get into some more specifics on this one, but I also, we're going to take a quick little timeout mid-show here to talk about one of our newest sponsors. And you may notice some good-looking hats on Jake and Brad and I. And Pete, you look great too, but you just don't have the hat. It's fine. And that's because we got a great sponsor. He's one of our good friends, and we would just want to talk him up for a minute. He's one of our regulars here on the OBR streams. It's our very own OG Philly. You know him as OG Philly, Philly ASC. Scott Fillinger, man, has generously agreed to come on and sponsor this program.
He doesn't sponsor of our other Mike's microphone, though. That's what he doesn't sponsor.
Just what's going on now?
Nothing. Just wanted to make that clear.
Okay. All right. Did something happen? I'm trying to talk about Philly. And I only got so much in me that can talk positively about Philly before I have to get into like the way I usually talk about Philly. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Listen, we welcome Philly in as an official sponsor of the OBR post game show here. And we look forward to giving him positive shout outs as much as I could, as much as possible. Philly works with everybody from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses like the OBR and creating products that reflect their branding, like the stuff we are wearing on the stream right here. So if you've got a business, a nonprofit, a personal need for high quality merchandise, and you want to give that business to a fellow Browns fan, reach out to Philly. He'll take care of you. You guys know how to get in touch with Philly. Make sure you reach out to him because you could have awesome stuff that looks like this as well. So shout out to Philly. All right, boys, let's get into some specifics on this game. And let's go over to the offense because for three quarters, what we have heard ever since the Bears pulled in Montez Sweat was how much better this Bears defense has been. And they were really good, especially the first three quarters. They were all over Joe Flacco. Again, a lot of that has to do with the Browns aren't just on backup offensive linemen at this point. They're on backups offensive linemen at this point. And they got banged up even more so in this game, losing Joel Bitonio. But, man, Montez Sweat, the Chicago Bears applied pressure early. The Browns could not run the ball. They could not run the ball at all for any reason in this game today. And really, it was ugly for the Browns. They really struggled to move the ball, to get anything going, and to keep any drives moving, and then a flip switch. So just talk about the Browns' offense through the first three quarters of the game. I know we had a question. I'll see if I can go find it and pull it back up. But, you know, is there anything these guys can do to run the ball more effectively when you've got the guys out there that you've got out there? Or are the Browns going to have to figure out ways to be even better and more efficient in the passing game?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Walter asked a good question about there about Joe's interceptions. I'll write those up. Two of which I believe were his fault. Well, the first one was in my opinion, based on what I can see from the TV view, not his fault. But we'll see what the player said, and then we'll try to break that down, Walter. But there's some miscommunication stuff that happened there. But yeah, anyway, the run stuff, I don't know, man. Well, actually, Walter, I'll answer your question right now. So. First of all, yo, thanks, man. Like that is a really generous amount of money to throw.
Thanks, Walter.
Wow, shout out to you, Walter.
So the first one is a concept called Y Juke. Haas is the concept. Okay, so it's a hitch route outside, and you get a vertical route up the seam. And typically, you get this on both sides, and then you get a tight end with a little settle option route. They call it a very popular variation called Haas Y Juke, and. What happens is you get the seam route. If it's what's called middle of the field closed, which is a single high safety, usually correlated between cover three or man-to-man cover one coverages, up the seam. If it's open up the seam, meaning nobody's there, you're to continue to carry that because the quarterback can manipulate that defender, that single high defender, and throw off of him. And in this specific play, I think it was Eddie Jackson, they were in middle of the field open coverage, which is usually, again, correlated to cover two, cover four. There's some other little wrinkles. But when you have a cap safety and you're the guy running the what's called the vertical route, you convert it to what's called a bender, which is when you get past the second level, that hook defender, you kind of bend it right behind him and in front of the safety. It's pretty apparent to me that Joe wanted him to bend it because the safety's capping the route. And it would have been a chance for a nice completion. Would it have happened? I don't know. Need to see the all 22 of it. But it's pretty obvious to me based on Kevin's reaction, which was ticked off on the sideline. And then the general concept as I've come to know it, that it is a mistake by the young wide receiver. The second interception, there is a spacing concept, horizontal spacing routes going on to stretch the defense. Joe is dropping back, trying to find the settle route over the middle of the field. There's a middle of the field settle, and then there's two arrow routes, or what we called them, which are 45 degree sort of stop hitches. And on the left side, so Joe's looking down the middle. Yes, I always get the Edmonds brother screwed up. Is this just Tremaine, right? Tremaine Edmonds is the middle hook, the three receiver hook side. So he opens and then is crashing down to Tillman's route, which is called we called it a settle right over the quarterback's eyes at 5 yards. Joe sees him crashing and is trying to throw him away from that backer. But what happens is the guy, I think it's TJ Edwards, who is covering Amari's arrow route, is reading Joe's eyes and breaks on it well before Joe throws it. So Joe is leading him away from the middle linebacker. And as he's leading him away from the mic, the Will does a great job, TJ Edwards, of beating him to the spot and knocking that football loose. And so on like real time, you're like, that looks like Tillman's fault. Well, it's not really Tillman's fault. It's Joe's fault, but it's actually Joe just not seeing a great play from that linebacker. If you actually go back and watch it, you'll see that Amari Cooper is standing there with nobody covering him. So that's where you have to, maybe Joe's going to probably, you know, he's seen a lot of ball in his years. He's going to go back and be like, I can't stare these things down. The last one was a nice play off of play action. Actually believe it was run action. So everybody was selling the run. So you get a motion out of the backfield from Harrison Bryant to create a couple vertical stretches on the left side against cover three. With cover three, if you get a capped or an inline tight end, you'll see a lot of corners. If you get a vertical from number one, which Harrison Bryant became the number one, you'll see them overlap to try to help the single high safety. So what that means is if he gets a vertical from one and a vertical from two, which is David, who's in three-point stance, they'll overlap it. They'll play a little in between to be able to, if the quarterback looks them off and comes back to give that safety a chance, you can take over that route and kind of jump it. I'll give Tyreek Stevenson some credit. He did a nice job. When Joe turned his back and then tried to throw it, I don't know if something was at his feet, but he did not step into that throw and he didn't put it up the field a little bit. Now, he can't leave it inside. Single high safety is going to jump that, but he didn't drive it and he didn't put it up field. He left it behind and away on the back hip, and that let Stevenson come undercut it. So I hope that Walter answers your question. I have two of those being on Joe. I have one of them of those two that are on Joe, just kind of being a really nice defensive play. And then I have the first one being on Tillman.
I was going to say, ask you too. It's pretty much as simple as him just crossing that safety's face on the first one, right? And if the ball is there and time's up rightly, then
as far as I know, Pete, you know, you're coaching up your guys too, your quarterbacks. Like we always taught them, if they're running the bender, because you know it, and the guy know. Like if I get a mofo look middle of the field open, I know I got benders. Now if I see a roll, it obviously cancels it out, right? If you get two open pre-high and one rolls down, one rolls to middle, cover three, or there's different variations, but generally it's cover three, then I know that those guys are converting vertical. If they don't, and in that case, I believe I have to watch the all 22 to be 100%. It looks like Eddie Jackson sits on the hash pre-snap and he sits there the whole time. So once he clears that backer, you're throwing that with anticipation and trying to put it on that backer's shoulder to kind of lead him back into that window once those hips get flipped to get a, you know, because usually what those backers are trying to do is redirect number two. They want to redirect them and not let them run free up the hash. So once that linebacker tries to redirect or get hands on, you're replacing him with the throw, bending it back into the middle of the field to try to get a chance. It's a very popular four verts conversion, four vertical routes conversion, but Haas uses the same principles. So they're not giving you two seam routes that are just covered up into two high safeties.
Certainly seemed like they ran the same concept against the Rams, and they were successful. Like it was right on the money, hit it. And that's sort of the problem. One, it's why some coaches hate read routes, because you get receivers who come back the sideline and go, well, I thought I saw, and they got the other team has the ball. But the other part of that is just Flacco is so ingrained to just go with what he thinks he sees, and he will just throw it. You saw that with the slant last week where he's firing it. You saw it with a couple of the throws this week where what he sees, he seems to think whatever he sees, the receiver will guaranteed see, which in some ways is what you want. You saw this with a miscommunication with Amari Cooper late in the game too, where he's just like, Amari Cooper's supposed to be right here. Should be running that sort of post slant action, and Amari sold it a little bit long. And Flacco's like, I see this, I'm throwing it. And the other part of that is obviously the stress of the line of scrimmage. The Bears dominated the line of scrimmage in this game. And Jaren Christian can't play dead. I mean, that's a huge problem right now. James Hudson III can't pass block to save his life. You were down to, I think, offensive lineman 12 when Luke Whipler came into the game.
Yeah.
So, look, bad? It's tough to run the ball when you're down that many guys. And then you credit to the Bears. They have gotten a lot better up front, particularly when they have Montez Sweat, who's a problem. But they're stout up front. Andrew Billings worked over Nick Harris for a good part of the game, especially early. So that's going to be difficult. And, you know, can it get better? Maybe. I mean, when they blocked well, Jerome Ford will hit it. I mean, in some ways, I'm very frustrated for Jerome Ford. He seems to have gotten so much better over the course of the season. And just some of the run blocking is just like there's just nothing for him. Hanging him out to dry. It's weird injuries. Like, look, given what Joe Bitonio was dealing with his knee, I'm not terribly surprised that now it has sort of like become a back issue. You know, you overcompensate to a certain point. He's been playing so long that it happens. I suspect we'll see what they say. I suspect he will be fine. Ethan Posick having a stinger that lasts this long is just weird. Again, these things happen, but it's strange. But given what the Browns do effectively to hide their tackle play, they need those guys inside because they just don't have enough ass inside to move guys off the ball with what they've got. So it's a tough spot for them to be in. They're trying to do some stuff to help. And then last but not least, they're not getting much out of their tight ends and blocking. David Njoku has been, you know, he's a superstar in this game as a receiver. He's been pretty disappointing this year as a run blocker. In years past, he's been like exceptional. You know, right off the bat, they tried to run the ball to the right. Njoku's expecting double team help with Harrison Bryant. Njoku immediately gets driven to the backfield. Harrison leaves too early, and the play's blown up in the backfield. Like that, if you can't block with your initial five and then you're not able to win with seven, you're just not going to run the ball effectively with over the course of a game or whatever.
It's kind of where I get back to, you know, at this point, it's not like you're bringing any personnel in at this point to change anything. You know, we're here. They are kind of who they are at this point. You know, offensively, I hate to say it, but you almost have to live and die with what Flacco is going to provide offensively. And that if that means he's going to turn it over and it's going to cost you, you're also going to have to help, you know, ask him to bail you out like he did today with a couple incredible throws down the stretch and some great play from Njoku and Cooper. And I mean, the throw to Cooper is wild, right? Like he throws it between three bears and he just kind of cuts in between all of them and grabs it and cuts it up the sideline. I mean, the same reasons that feels like the same kind of throw that, you know, Pete, you were just talking about where he's just going to throw it if he sees it. That feels like a similar throw to that, but that one gets completed. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know. I just feels like the run game isn't part of the ingredients of this team going forward. I mean, they're going to continue to try and they're going to continue to try to keep teams honest with it. But like, unless you face a team that is just completely decimated in their front seven, yeah, I just don't see them running the ball a ton against a lot of teams the rest of the way.
You got two tackles who, I mean, Hudson's a little better than Christian, but I mean, it just takes one side of that being screwed up. But you also have a guy, you know, I think Nick Harris is a fighter, but anytime Andrew Billings is lined up over him, it's a physical mismatch. It's just not going to work out that often. And he was blowing up a lot of what, and I hate that Andrew Billings deserves credit since he left Cleveland and he got back into a little bit of shape. Like he's got another contract from the Bears. They like him and he's playing well. So, yeah, I mean, they're dealing with, I think it's something we're not used to. Brown's synonymous with O-line, run game, Nick Chubb. We all get that idea in our head, but they're not that. They're dealing with two mistake-prone tackles, a left guard who's beat up at best, a center who's a bit undersized, can fight, but he's a bit undersized. And then you have a right guard who's, you know, can I think Wyatt's talented. He's been out there and he's been playing and deserves credit, but he's not perfect. So, people want an answer for the run stuff, and I don't think there's a great one to give them. They're just struggling to figure, and they have to map it out because they can't live this way. But I don't think you're going to see any more 150 to 200 yard rushing games from them the rest of the way. Like they're just not going to be able to pull that stuff off. But there's a medium between running for 30 yards between your three backs and running for 150. They have to find some levels of success. And I thought early in the game they did at certain times. They had some runs that went for 5, 6, 7 yards. But as the game wore on, it became pretty evident that Kevin didn't trust it. And he knows, at least trying to fight it, that they can't go backward on these situations. And it's especially frustrating when you get into 2nd and 2s, 2nd and 1s, and you're going backward and you're into 3rd and 2s, 3rd and 3s. They found their way into too many of those today. Where they're trying to either take a shot or they're trying to pick up that quick first down, and then they can't come back on 3rd down and 2 and run it like they've been accustomed to doing. So, and I do think that, you know, they could use a little bit more hard count. They could use a little bit more fluctuation with that from Joe. That's something he could get a little better at to keep teams off balance. Because I thought the Bears had a good feel for what they were trying to run and B, when to get off the football. But I'm just, you know, we're searching. I don't have the answer. They tried to laterally run it to do their pin pull stuff they like to do. And I even saw him run inside zone because I think they're searching right now to figure out what to do. So that's, if you're talking about one of the bigger offense subplots the last 3 weeks, it's how can they figure out to have some level of run game efficiency? Because, you know, Joe is, like Pete said at the beginning, he's Joe. He's going to have a couple, 2 or 3 throws a game that are like, that could have been intercepted. And today those were intercepted, but he still can sling it a little bit. So you're not like, you know, you can put some on his shoulders here, but they can't continue to have him 40 burger throw attempts. They need to find a way to be better if they can. I mean, I think they want that. I don't think if you talk to Kevin after these games, he's like, yeah, I love throwing Joe 40 times a game. They're trying, they're searching. They can't find it right now.
Boys, now let's get into the fourth quarter. Before we do that, though, I do want to call back something that happened in the chat earlier. We had some gifted subs that got sent out, and I want to just make sure we call those guys out. Pat Shea with 10 gifted subs, and then Matt J. Darcy followed up with 5 more. Huge shout-out to you guys. Thank you for jumping in, gifting some subs, making sure people keep coming back here to the OBR for their Browns coverage, and thank you so much for the support. So shout-out to those two guys who did that. And then we get into the fourth quarter. Again, so many questions through the first three. The offense struggled. The run game didn't exist. And the Browns put up 7 points through three quarters. And then all of a sudden, here comes the fourth quarter. And when all was said and done, Joe Flacco goes up over 300 yards with a couple touchdowns again. For the first time since 2012, the Cleveland Browns have two receivers go over 100 yards in a game. For the first time since Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron did it, it was Cooper and Njoku both go over 100 yards. You saw the big catch from Goodwin deep down the field. Cedric Tillman got involved. But really, once the fourth quarter hits, it was Flacco, it was Cooper, it was Njoku, and those guys were running the show. The flip switched, boys. And when Flacco was comfortable throwing to those guys, they were making plays. It's just, it's pretty awesome to see when things switch for this team. You've got a couple guys out there that can make not just a good play here or there, but David Njoku's turned into a guy that can help carry a team to a win. Amari Cooper is a guy that can help carry a team to a win. And when Joe Flacco's on and throwing him the ball the way he was, that throw, boys, on 3rd and 15, as Flacco's getting hit off his back foot, as he just sees Njoku towards the end and just floats it out to him for that huge 30-plus yard pickup, what they did in the fourth quarter was spectacular. It was spectacular.
I just real quickly want to just say one thing about this, and that for a long time we've talked about David Njoku and what his ceiling looks like and what, you know, his payday, is he living up to his contract and, you know, his numbers and this and that. Joe Flacco's emergence or his, entrance into this offense and what we've seen the last 2 weeks is certainly, I think, given us a glimpse into what ceiling David Njoku looks like. Last week, 8 targets, 6 for 91 and 2 touchdowns. This week, another amazing touchdown catch, 14 targets, 10 catches and goes over 100 yards. So I think we're seeing kind of what, peak Njoku can really look like.
Yeah, and also helps they're throwing it 40 times a game. So guys are going to get some opportunity, right? So, I think we've hit on David pretty well. I certainly like the aspects of what we're talking about here. But, Mike, what was your original question? Is it just David? Is that it?
It's David, it's the Cooper, offense. It's Flacco. It's just the way the offense responded in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they found some downfield shots. I need to rewatch the Goodwin throw. I don't know if that – do you guys remember? I think it was a gun play-action throw. I could be wrong, though. It's all moved pretty quickly after the game. But they found some wrinkles off of action, run action. Even though they couldn't run it, you can still use the effects of getting a team to be hungry to stop it. And this is two straight weeks that I will give them credit for that. They did this against the Jags where they killed them in play action. And I can probably look up this information as we sit here, but I think they really hurt them. Their big chunk throws came off of play action as well. So, you know, the old science out there that telling you don't need to run it well to have play action is holding pretty true for the Browns. But I feel like they've been able to, you want to give them credit. I'm trying to find it here real quick. The Browns were 8 of 12 for 193, a touchdown and an interception. And the interception, as we talked about a bit a while ago, should have been a touchdown up the seam there as well to Njoku. So they were really good in play action. You're again talking about Goodwin had 1 catch, 57 play action. Amari Cooper 1 catch, 51 play action. Tillman 2 for 32. And Njoku 1 for 31. So they were really, really humming with that. So again, like the credit where it should be given, right? If you identify through three quarters what they're trying to tie their coverage to their fronts, and the Browns picked apart things they thought they could do route concept wise, and they found those fourth quarter answers, because I believe Joe threw for over 200 in the fourth quarter alone. So again, we want the opening script. We want the points now, but They figure it out. They figured it out in the fourth quarter with some shot plays that could really put them in the game. And they deserve, I think, a ton of credit for that, guys. So I was impressed by that. I was impressed, as David gets more targets, he seems more comfortable than ever. I hope that continues because he can clearly produce and he's feeling good about himself. But I thought Amari was special again. He had a couple balls maybe he wants back that he should have caught. But like again, 4 catches, 109 and staying in bounds up the right sideline, and he gets a lot of tilted coverage. And I know Tillman's a far from perfect product, but when he does find a way to reel it in, he's really strong and he's not easy to bring down. And you can see why they like that part of his game. So encouraged. I was a little bummed some of the screen stuff didn't pan out. They had that first screen they threw for 25, 30 yards to Pierre Strong that got called back on a little bit of a phantom holding call, but whatever. Yeah. So that was a well done one. Then I thought they had, I don't know if you guys thought it as much as I did, they caught a lazy defensive tackle at the wrong time. They threw that middle screen in the final drive, and everything was perfect for it. And that DT right was just standing there, just didn't chase like he should have. He's kind of being lazy. So I thought the screen stuff was kind of well timed out, and it had a chance to be pretty good. But, I always give coaches credit. If you can throw for 200 yards in the fourth quarter, tie your play action to it, that's some schemed up stuff, man. And that's the goods. That's what you should want your offense to do, is come up with solutions late. So the Bears didn't have any, because we saw that. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Cedric Tillman. He's just massive. He's just a huge body in the middle of the field. Marquise Goodwin had the big play on the 57 yards or whatever it was. He had a huge play in setting up the Njoku up to the right sideline. They ran like a clear concept.
Yep.
Marquise Goodwin is just out there in space, just flying up the field. He takes two DBs out the way. There's no other guy to widen out with Njoku, so he's just wide open in the flat. That was a huge contribution. To Jake's point about play action, if you probably watched the Jags game and were probably sitting there going, why aren't they still running this in the second half? The Jags adjusted. They kept blitzing weak side, backside endlessly. And what Jake's talking about with what they did with the play action stuff in this one, with the run action, is they came up with an answer for it. They kept pulling Teller out or the left guard, depending on the situation. You saw Dunn do it a couple times. So now he was an extra body to go seal Sweat on a couple of those. What did that do? That gave Joe the ability to step up in the pocket and deliver some of those passes, where last week they kept running play action. Then that one Flacco turns around, he suddenly got a guy in his face, and you're like, oh, crap, we can't do this anymore. So you talk about coaching and what do you see and what are adjustments. That was a huge adjustment to them being able to then find an answer for Sweat in that situation. That was one of the big sort of storylines I wanted to see in the game, was how do the Browns coaching staff deal with Sweat, because the right tackle, I don't know if he touched him in the game, but he was there. But they kept throwing different things out there. And then that allowed the big play to Goodwin, that allowed some of these other plays to develop. But just finding ways, your play action, in addition to all the things you wanted to do, you wanted to freeze those second level defenders. You wanted to create space in certain ways, but it's also an easy way to diversify your blocking scheme and pass protection to solve some of the questions you have. You weren't really worried about some of these other spots. Like Andrew Billings probably wasn't getting a sack, but Montez Sweat definitely was, if you didn't come up with an answer for it.
Yeah. I'm looking at this, this action here, which is at this point in the season, when you are, you know, 15 weeks deep, 14 games in, teams know who you are. And they ran, the Browns like to run gun draw, as we know, and they sort of tied the backfield action to a draw. So Flacco just extends the football to his left. To your point, Pete, they bring the backside guard, kick him around to sell this, to sell what they love to run, which is a power concept from the gun. And Flacco twirls around like he's running boot. That creates a pretty wide pocket, because Montez Sweat has to extend to keep him in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Step up, and you catch the right coverage. They're playing two man. You catch him at the right time. They're late to rotate deep on Brisker's side to the boundary, and it's a 57 yard throw. But the thing that stands out to me again, at this point in the year, when you're beyond self-scouting, like that happens mid-year, and you'd love to happen at your bye week, but the Browns had a ridiculous bye week.
Yeah.
You know, you're self-scouting as much as you can. You're trying to really just, your identity is your identity, and you're doing a lot of things, but how can we throw wrinkles, confusion wrinkles at these teams to create some advantages? And I thought they did a really good job on this play looking at it. Obviously, we'll spend time on Chalk Talk looking at it and breaking it down a bit more with, the visual aid helps, but it was a different concept to what they normally run boot stuff with, or their play action stuff with, even in the gun. They like to just usually cross, have the running back cross your face. This was a little different. So I really enjoyed this now that I'm watching it back.
All right, boys. So offensively, again, a slow start most of the game, tough going for the offense. They get it going in the fourth quarter. I do want to take the last couple minutes here and talk about the defensive performance. We started with it a little bit, but again, we talked about a defense that really only gave up 10 points, and that is when the touchdown came on an extremely short field after a turnover by the offense. Defensively, the Cleveland Browns played a whale of a ball game themselves. Up the middle, Dalvin Tomlinson, Shelby Harris were really good in this game. Dalvin Tomlinson was a force. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was flying everywhere all over the field, and the defensive backs were making some plays. So just talk about the Browns defense and just what stood out to you in this game against the Bears.
Thought they played really well all around. I would just say that, you know, the safeties stepped up, and that was huge, except for when Daron Harmon came in. I think he got beat for one play. He was in there towards the end when they had him in dime, but I didn't see. I'd have to watch Jake's show tomorrow night, see more of if he was in there more than that one play. But, boy, Greg, as much as we gave Greg Newsom shit a couple weeks back, for playing like crap, he's played a lot better, man. He played a lot better today. I thought he played a really good game today.
He had a great game today.
Yeah, he was all over the place. So good on Greg for bouncing back, and sorry for cussing. My bad.
The dance moves were killing me when they were down 10, by the way. They were killing me when they were down 10.
Oh yeah, they don't care. They don't care. They're going to get their juice going, man.
And even worse though was Mark Sanchez talking about the dance moves and then, leading Fox to zeroing in on him every time. Like, bro, they do that every play, man. Stop.
Listen, he believed. Who can deny him? He danced the whole game and they won.
Right.
Greg Newsom, I thought, I know an unpopular opinion. I thought he played well against the Rams in coverage. They asked him to do a lot in that game. Played really well last week, played well this week in coverage.
They're bumping him in and out, Pete. They're basing it up. Yes, he's outside guy in base.
They're asking him to do a lot. He does a whole lot of communicating pre-snap. Like he's got a lot of responsibility, so I give him credit. Having said that, he can't tackle and flag. I mean, it's embarrassing how bad it almost killed them. Him and Denzel Ward did not touch Tyler Scott. Shout out Norton High School. They didn't touch him. And like, there's a part of me that's like, I get they're trying to like protect the sideline, but just get the guy on the ground. Like we almost saw this last week where Greg Newsom was so over concerned about the sideline that he almost didn't tackle. And you literally had that happen this week. So that part was tough. Za'Darius Smith is over criticized in my view. Like this was a game where he was very valuable in every game he's played against a mobile quarterback. He's made a huge play in pursuit. And this was another one. This time it was on a screen as opposed to the quarterback, but he's doing some really good stuff and they need him. They have to have him. Certainly Myles Garrett continues to be phenomenal. And you're continuing to see different ways to do it. It's been good that we've seen more out of Dalvin Tomlinson. Thankfully, they've gotten favorable matchups. They've played some awful centers, but he's done a really good job. Shelby Harris is just a good football player. They owe him a sack. Siaki Ika, he exists. I mean, he's on the ground a lot, but he's there. There's just a lot of – again, you throw that many players out there, you're going to run into some stuff. We saw the 2-12 men on the field penalties. That's an indictment of having so many different players on the field that they aren't sort of caught up on that. And then you had some coverage busts, but the Bears couldn't catch. I mean, I give them a ton of credit. Again, to your point, the Browns gave up 14 points off turnovers in a game where they only scored 17. But if not for the grace of terrible hands, we might be pissed off at the defense for getting blown coverages like on that Robert Tonyan ball or that Tyler Scott play. Or some of the other things that they did. So
it's reminiscent, Pete, of the San Francisco situation where they had that IU catch. He comes back inside and like
ran untouched.
He doesn't touch it. It was really weird.
It looked like they quit on that particular play. Yeah. This one they at least played to the whistle. But yeah. So look, you give them all the credit in the world because they were that limited and they figured it out. I think this game really favored the Browns defense. Who knows with the Jets, but like when you look at the Houston Texans, like sneak peeking ahead of that one, you're probably a little bit more concerned based on what we've seen in this game. But hey, maybe they get some more guys back healthy. Maybe they can get back on the right track. But for what they needed to have, a solid performance. And the thing you sort of get left with is as much as the Bears couldn't catch the ball, there were so many players where the Browns were right there and just couldn't get it. I mean, this almost had an eerie Roethlisberger feel to it. If the Bears win that game, like Justin Fields throwing that touchdown the way he did and some of the other plays. But with what they had, I like the game plan. I like what Jim Schwartz was able to do. I felt good about what they had in spite of all the guys that were out.
I like some of those green dog blitzes in the second half when Fields was feeling a little comfortable in the pocket. Usually those are just linebacker read blitzes. So what they'll do is, hey, if you're in man-to-man coverage and you're back and you're in the back or covering the running back, if he stays in, you got the green light once you feel like he's committed to staying in to blitz. And JOK, I think three or four times really, really got after him down the sight line, right down the middle of the face. So I thought those were nice adjustments. They were better in cover two than they have been for a while. I still think cover two makes me so nervous at times, but I thought they were better in this one. But yeah, man, I mean, Miles gets 12 pressures. Not one of those pressures turns into a sack, right? So that's a little bit frustrating. But I thought collectively they got after Fields and made him uncomfortable. A couple really great plays from him. One was dropped. I think that was Robert Tonyan dropped it. But there's some others that he got out of and made some nice plays, the touchdown throw. But there's never, to me, there was not much of a sense of comfort from him all day. He felt uneasy. And I think we'll watch it. But I feel like the Browns covered man coverage-wise. They put themselves in some good spots. And they were where they needed to be a lot of it. And I even thought, again, so tough to judge safeties on the TV view because it's like judging ghosts. You can't even see them. But I thought Hickman felt to me early here that he was in the right place at the right time on a lot of decisions that were made. So we'll see. We'll watch it back. We'll dig into the numbers and peel it all away for you and try to have a good opinion on it that's formulated by some evidence. But, I mean, how could you not feel encouraged the way that they were able? I think the last 10 Bears drives ended in turnover or punt, I believe. So, like, they were bottled up, man. Like, they were bottled up. So I thought the Browns did a great job of manipulating. I thought the run defense was much better as well. I think two of the backs went for one, and I think if I'm wrong here, I think Herbert went for like 1 yard on six carries and Foreman went for -6 on five or six carries. So I think Rashawn Johnson, their rookie, is their best back, in my opinion, had a decent like 7 or 6 for 35, but they only ran for 80 yards, and that's Justin Fields getting 30 himself. So they bottled that side of things up really well. I think they held him to 270, 3.4 yards per play. So yeah, it's hard to be bummed about that. 4 of 18 continuing their third down success stuff here where they're just getting teams off the field. That's the saving grace. And it'd be crazy if you look at this defense, if they could get some of the turnover luck to go their way with how well they get teams off the field. If they could, you know, have a few more of those fumbles, you know, Fields got strip sacked. They recovered that, right? Like, you know, it doesn't seem to bounce away. They just get off the field so well that they're able to turn turnovers for them or punters punting it away. Right. So, again, you can't give them enough credit, especially when it was 17-7 and you felt like your offense was not going to move the ball and they were able to do that to them. So, you know, holding them on 10 drives, 9 of their last 10 drives to do that to them, only giving the only points on the board today, guys, were a 1 yard drive and, a pick six. And then the only defense driven points, and the defense made it hell for them to score from the 1 yard line. You know, so then the only other points was a field goal that they scored. So it's like that defensive performance was, again, that's everything you want. It's everything you want.
Shout out Cam Mitchell on that shoestring tackle impact.
That's a great huge. He played 20 huge. Snaps and that play was a large drive. I think that was the play right before the Goodwin bomb. If I recall that drive stopped, then they converted the 57 yarder. That play was massive. They had another one on a jet sweep, but they finally stopped a fly sweep. I was so happy to see them tackle somebody.
Alex Wright.
What's funny about that play is I coached against Tyler Scott, and they ran that exact concept. And for anyone who knows, Mike Hall, who's at Ohio State, went to the backfield and grabbed him basically by the shirt and just pulled him down, not unlike Alex Wright did, in the exact same spot in the field for a loss of the play. It was awesome.
Yeah,
Alex Wright, here's what I'll say with this. I love Okoronkwo. I like that Alex Wright is playing smarter gap sound football in that play. That the thing that drives me nuts about Oboe is he loves to go inside, and that's a play where they get gashed so many other weeks. Because if you're the Bears, you of course are setting that up. You've been watching this team get killed by that concept over and over and over again. Alex Wright steps up and makes the smart football play, the right football play, and is completely rewarded for it.
And the Browns defense, run defense did. Sorry, Brad. This is quick. Like, there's clear that I said this with you on the pregame show, Brad, that they're going to challenge the Browns lateral run defense, that teams have been doing a variation of toss concepts, pin pull concepts on the perimeter for success. They've been getting killed, but they finally, outside of one time where Miles got cracked and they ran fields on a quarterback, just a quarterback outside zone, I thought they did a great job. Pinning in outside run game in a way that they haven't done. So they answered that, because that's been the thing teams have been picking on them with that stuff. So I just want to illuminate that.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on the slide. Like, okay, NFL needs to come up with some kind of clarification on this rule, because the fake slide to taking two more steps to get the first down is some bull crap. And if they're going to say that if you give yourself up and that's where they're going to spot the ball, you can't start to go into a slide and then take two more steps past the first down marker once you've tricked everybody into the fact that you're giving yourself up.
If you're calling that a penalty, if you hit them and that's a penalty, then the moment they indicate, you can tell from their body language that they're going to be sliding, they're done. They're done at that moment. So I thought that was a terrible spot, and I thought
horrible
should have been if there was a way to – I just don't know challenge. That there's language to challenge that. Can you challenge the spot at which a quarterback starts to slide? Because that is like the Kenny Pickett pit play back in college where he did the fake slide and kind of kept running off of it. Somebody's going to do that. A guy like Fields is going to do that. So I just think that's a really tough thing to just like – shrug your shoulders about, because quarterback protection is what everything is about in the NFL these days. And if we got guys who are going to deke that out and fake you out with that, that's not fair. That's an abuse of the protection there. So I do totally understand what you're saying, Brad. And I was pretty bummed about that situation at the time, because it was like any third and one or fourth and one, the Browns were tough. So like getting them into those situations is not something you can just scoff at, right?
Yeah. I will finish this on the defensive side of things, and then we'll get things wrapped up here. But I will also say Myles Garrett is completely justified if he wants to get another $25,000 fine this week. I don't know what he did. I don't know who he is pissed off. I don't know what's going on. But specifically that one play in the second half where he basically got horse collared in the backfield, and it just didn't get called. Just, I don't know. How does Myles Garrett get a call? You think superstars usually get calls, don't they? He gets nothing.
It was abusive.
Yeah. I was saying this after the at times of the show. I think if you hear 49ers fans, they'll say Bosa gets held, Steelers fans, Watt gets held, Cowboys fans, Parsons gets held. Every team's fans say their guy gets held the worst. But we're going to protect our guy here, and I think that what's going on is – I think that – and Pete, maybe you can talk about this too a little bit. The NFL has done more with – Miles is he's an edge winner, right? He can do different things, but he likes to turn the corner. And when you try to turn the corner a lot, you'll rip the inside arm through, and tackles are getting him like hooking across his body. And the NFL has made some of that legal. We should have a Brandon Thorne on, or our guy Kyle Murphy, and talk about this a little bit. But the NFL has given some leeway to those situations where the tackle is getting ripped under the edge's inside arm is up. I can get it in picture form and show you guys that way, but like it's where you're like, you'll see the arm of the tackle like almost across their chest or body, depending on how low Miles is. And they actually they're not calling that holding. They're letting those go with a very specific designation. But I mean, there are some others, like the one where he gets grabbed by the jersey from behind is pretty awful miss today that is going to make the rounds on social. But I think that my general point is the way Miles wins a lot as an edge rusher and the way the NFL is calling that hook, they're not calling it as often as they used to, is not going to lead to as many holdings as you might think watching it. But that's a good topic for Chalk Talk or a guest to come on and talk about, because the NFL has altered some of their belief of holding on those.
And it's frustrating because with the shoulder, he's more inclined to go outside. So like it becomes its own problem that he doesn't have the full strength of that arm. Guys are just wrenching on it endlessly. So it incentivizes him to go outside and incentivizes them to get sort of a predictable pass rush path and then just hook it, which is what's happening. He gets hooked. But to Jake's point, they aren't calling it. And they flat out have said, like, if your guy's doubled, that, you know, that sort of takes care of itself. Well, he's double teamed, so he's not getting held. And when you're the guy who's getting doubled more than anyone else in the league, that's a whole lot of reps where you're not getting the benefit of the doubt. Whereas some of these other guys, I mean, occasionally, I mean, let me see the play where they just decide not to block Myles Garrett as opposed to the TJ Watts or Nick Bosa's world. I would love to see a few of those as opposed to just the unblocked gift sack I see those guys get. So it's tough. You know, this is part of the protecting quarterbacks element. The problem is it's now putting those guys at more risk for injury. And you know, that could be a huge problem for some of these guys if somebody goes down because they get essentially like horse collared and, you know, fall down in the wrong way or whatever, and they go out for the season. Now you have a whole new issue.
It's like on the Bears side, Montez Sweat has 6 pressures and 2.5-3 sacks. Miles has 12. That's why sacks are so hard, because it's driven by what the quarterback is doing so often, right? So it's just frustrating, and the variance of the type of player you're going against, right? So let's just say Montez didn't sweat much.
All right, I'm ending it on that. We're getting out of here. Before we get out of here, let me just give you the rundown of the shows that you can expect here on the OBR Streaming Network this week. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Jake's talked about it a lot. Join him for Chalk Talk, where he'll break down the film from this Browns victory over the Chicago Bears. He'll look at all this stuff we talked about in more detail to see where the Browns can maybe look to exploit some things moving forward and where they need to clean some things up. Tuesday night, I'll be back for 2 shows. I'll be joined in the doghouse by my buddy Cecil Shorts III, coming on to talk about the Houston Texans and the matchup the Browns have there. And then we'll have Garage Beers on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Wednesday, it's OBR Weekly with Barry and Fred, as they'll take your questions and talk all things Browns. And then Thursday, you come back with Brad Ward on All Eyes on Cleveland, and he'll have some great special guests going on there as we preview that Houston Texans game. So that's going to do it. If you're not joining us on the streaming network, get over to the OBR.com and make sure you hit subscribe there, where you can read all the great stuff these guys are doing, all the great stuff Pete's doing, all the great stuff Jake, Brad, Andrew, Cody, Fred, everybody with the OBR doing great stuff on the OBR.com. And make sure you reach out to Philly again if you need some good stuff, if you need
these
some good gear.
Are sick, by the way.
Yeah, these are great shirts. Brad, looks like you and I like talked to each other before we got dressed today.
Well, yeah, that's kind of clownish, but
we planned this out. We planned it out.
I'm just saying, the stuff is nice. If you got a logo and you want to put some stuff on it, go find Philly.
Talk to Philly. And you can see it right here. GoSync.com for all of your marketing needs. All right, that's going to do it for the Game Day Rewind. The Cleveland Browns, for their 9th win of the season, take down the Chicago Bears 20-17. And we're really, really close here to seeing if these Browns can lock their way into a playoff matchup. 3 games left. We will talk to you next week after the Texans game. Until then, cheers, everybody. Go Browns.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.